From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in a company's boardroom this morning. Executives were debating which employees to choose for a new project. It's a project that will entail some late nights or weekends. It's a big opportunity, and it's highly coveted in this particular office. Now, does the Me Too movement have an impact in this scenario? We've heard many people, often men, say that if you don't harass or assault women, you don't have to worry about working alongside women. We've also heard many people, usually men, say they're concerned about unfounded allegations. They worry they might say the wrong thing or be accused of something they didn't intend. And so in this latter scenario, maybe the executives, who are still most often male in this country, maybe they don't choose women for this project. Maybe they're too concerned about what could happen. Or maybe you think that's rare or unrealistic. Well, this hour, a conversation about the impact of the Me Too movement at work. A Pew Research Center poll conducted in February and March of last year revealed that 66% of adults and 65 and older now believe it's much harder for men to navigate workplace interactions. The survey also indicated 51% of Americans believe the increased focus on sexual harassment and assault has made it more difficult for men to know how to interact with women at work. Only 12% of Americans say the interactions are now easier after the Me Too movement started. Our guest is an attorney who joined us several months ago for a separate conversation, and during that discussion raised some thoughts about possible offshoots of the Me Too movement. And so this is exactly what we're talking about. The USA Today headline was, "Will Me Too turn into Not Her? The movement may come with unintended workplace consequences." Well, let's discuss that with Melanie Wolk, who's a litigation attorney with Trivette Christo. Welcome back to Connections. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Dawson. It's nice to be here again.
Well, let me just start with the point that our audience may make here, or at least concern. This is not an anti-Me Too conversation, and I know you felt that way and you feel strongly about that.
Absolutely. I think the Me Too movement has, in so many ways, moved women and women's difficulties they've had in the past forward. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had and continue to be had. This is taking that conversation a little bit further, that next step as, okay, it's out in the public now. What do we do now? How does this affect work environments, men, women, social engagements?
All right. So there's certainly a divide, if you look at polling, men and women, over who's concerned about what this might mean in the workplace. So my first question for you is that scenario I posed, where executives are deciding which employees to choose for a new project. It might entail late nights at the office. It might entail weekends or trips, et cetera. Do you think, realistically, fewer women will get those opportunities in the Me Too era?
Yes, particularly right now. I would like to say no. I really would. But I think, putting aside individuals, every company, every business is very concerned, particularly in like small communities like Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse, that they're going to be that first business that becomes the headline in town. And they don't want to be the first business that becomes that headline. And therefore, they're going to do everything they can to avoid the situation from occurring or even the possibility of an accusation being made, accurate or not.
Are you hearing those? I mean, are you inferring that, or have you actually heard even privately from people saying, look, that cannot be us. We cannot be that firm.
I have absolutely heard it. I've also heard many, many men say, I hesitate very much to be alone in a conference room with a female. I don't know how to act anymore. And that comes from different ages across the spectrum here. So this is a conversation that we're going to need to start having about, you know, how do we move forward?
All right, so listeners, if you have thoughts on this, and I know we've heard from people in the past, especially in the last year and a half after the launch of what we would call the Me Too movement, who have either these kinds of concerns or maybe you scoff at this. But wherever you are on this, if you want to weigh in, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Melanie, do you think the Me Too movement was a corrective necessary, that it was absolutely vital that we see that women had a lot of really legitimate concerns about being harassed at work, being treated differently, being treated unfairly, being treated as objects, that the Me Too movement is a natural consequence of unfair treatment?
Absolutely. And, you know, particularly when we're looking at prior decades. You know, the way women were treated in the work environment in the 70s, very different than the way they're treated today. They also had very different roles in the work environment. So those things are very important, and I think it's a bit of a self-correcting and something that our society needed to acknowledge at some point. But you've got to take the, you know, the Hollywood names out of it and start breaking this down to how it really interacts on a day-to-day basis. I kind of look at it as Hollywood functions in its own cloud. And there were clearly some casting couches and various other things that go on. But most individuals, when they meet at a hotel, it's at the bar, it's in a meeting room, it's at dinner, they're not going up to someone's room to do work. That's just not what really happens anymore. So we need to look at this in more of a way it affects, you know, everyday Jane and Joe's life.
Okay. Now, when it comes to training requirements, we talked recently about how that has changed. Do you think it is wise and it is a good thing that now you can't have optional training? You must train. It must be a dynamic, interactive training. Is that a good thing?
Yes, absolutely. I think most people, I'm going to go everyone, knows, you know, the difference between, knows you shouldn't be touching someone, knows that you shouldn't make those sexual overture comments. I think those are things that we all know now. We've all been around long enough. I don't care if you're 75 or if you're 25 coming into the workspace. But there's all that gray area in between and how they're interpreted by other people and how someone should respond to it. And simply watching a video on how not to sexually harass someone isn't enough anymore. And the videos and the interactive and the, you know, role plays that we're having, I think, are at least trying to touch on the real reality more.
Okay. Well, some of our listeners clearly feel like you shouldn't need training, and this is a lot simpler than we're making it out. Let me read a few comments already here. Bethany says, with an eye roll emoji on Twitter, poor men. She's just not buying it. James says that men that are paranoid about Me Too should be a red flag for hiring managers and PR departments. And we've heard other comments already today saying, look, if you are not a creep, you've got nothing to worry about. What do you say to that?
Well, I say you're probably right. But the problem is everybody's version of a creep is different. It's not an objective standard. It becomes this subjectiveness of what someone thinks is creepy and what someone else might not. And I want to give you an example I just heard this weekend about where, you know, the concept of, you know, poor men, what was that, you know. A gentleman walks in to a school meeting, and it's an important meeting about his child. He's the father. And when he walks in the room, there are literally 15 women at the table. Makes me smile because I'm glad there's 15 women at the table and getting ready to discuss what's going to go on with this child. But as the man comes in, the father, he's the only man in the room. And he makes a comment and says, oh, I guess I'm going to bring the male perspective here, and smiles and chuckles. And many of the women chuckle too. And then as soon as it's out of his mouth, he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend anyone. I was just pointing out I was the only male, and starts backpedaling. Now it's an uncomfortable conversation. And those are the instances where maybe person sitting two to the left thought it was funny. And maybe the person two over from her did not find it funny. Those are the gray areas that we have to talk about when it comes to sexual indos and how that really interacts in not just business, but in social.
All right. Well, so if you are listening to this, again, rolling your eyes and thinking, just be a good person, I think Melanie is making the point that what the standard line is different. And even though that's an obvious point, I actually think that that's really important here, because could that be codified in workplace guidelines? It can't even, like a handbook. That's not even a standard of creepiness, really can't be codified, I guess.
And that's just it. Every human, male or female, has a different version of what they think is creepy or inappropriate. And I think there's those bright line rules we all know about. But I think when you move off of those, it gets really gray. And what somebody could say to me that I would not find remotely offensive, they might not be able to say to somebody else sitting next to me. And we've got to figure out how to give off either as women or men, the vibe of like, that's okay, that's not too far out of line, or whoa, I'm not comfortable with that. And even if that just becomes simply stating it, but we're going to have to find that ability to communicate with each other as to what will work and won't work, or I do fear this has a really bad effect on women.
All right, before I get to your phone calls, Kathy, Manon, Jane, are you saying as a litigation attorney, are we too quick to litigation or HR complaints with this?
I think we're too...
That's a huge generalization, by the way, and I understand that.
I think we're too quick to pass judgment. And I think what, as I just said, where one one person might find what was said offensive and go to HR, the person saying it never meant it in that way, or has said it to another staff member and it wasn't offensive to them. So I think we have to be very careful as a society in saying, you know, what truly is sexual harassment? What reaches that level in verbal cues? I mean, we all know if you touch someone, that's bad. We all know if you're making sexual jokes, that's bad. What about other things that are much more subtle? There are situations that happen every day in every business. A drop of a pen and two people go down for it. I mean, it goes on and on. And we have to figure out what's okay and what's not okay. And if we're trying to do that, not always pass judgment on that person that may have done or said something.
Maybe to push a little bit here. But if someone says something that's okay or at least tolerable for one person, usually a man talking to a woman, but not always. But let's say it's a man talking to a woman. He says, makes a comment. She, you know, sort of rolls her eyes, tolerates it. The next time he says it to a different woman in the office, she's saying, "I'm going to HR. I can't believe you said that." At the very least, does he not have to learn that the old ways may be changing?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the problem here. In Rochester particularly, we have a lot of gentlemen that work into their 70s and 80s, particularly in the law field. And the rules that they played by when they were in their 20s and 30s are not the rules that are playing in the businesses anymore. And they have to be retrained and communicated with as to what's appropriate and what's not. And I think they need to do that intergenerationally as well as with the different sex.
Let me get some of your feedback already. Kathy in Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking that call.
Sure.
I agree. I'm sorry I missed the first couple minutes of the conversation, so I don't know the name of your guest, but I can't agree with her more. I'm a middle-aged woman working in administration for 35 years, and the two comments I'd make quickly. The first is that over the years, I've seen a lot of really beautiful relationships develop through the workplace. People that have gotten to know each other and have been married for decades with children and grandchildren now. So, you know, I sometimes wonder, you know, work is a place we spend most of our time and we meet people. And the fact that people are going to have to be so cautious about venturing into relationships. Number two is I think harken back to when Mike Pence ran to be vice president, and how he was really mocked and ridiculed for the fact that he would not be alone with a woman without another person present or with his wife. And really how he was almost a visionary in that regard. Those are the two things I had to say.
All right, Kathy. Thank you. Yeah, I think there is an interesting conversation about Vice President Pence's remarks there, because he was mocked by a lot of them saying it was wise, even visionary. My concern, Melanie, and there's a lot here, I'll leave it to you to kind of respond to a lot of what Kathy had to say there. My concern with Vice President Pence is it sort of implies that there would be false allegations regularly leveled. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of false allegations or just invented, fabricated allegations. Do you?
I hope not. We haven't seen a lot of these issues come to the court system yet. There have been complaints going about the community, and they get settled very quickly because no business wants to be that business. I truly hope that no woman would out and out create a story. That would be just really putting the Me Too movement, as well as women in the workplace, back years. Do I think it's possible and potentially likely? Unfortunately, yes. I think it really could. And I think if we flip the roles and you put women in charge of men and they're running the businesses, I think that role, it could be just as likely that men would make the complaints against women. It's the society we live in today. It's litigious. It's very conscious of money and press. And so I think my other concern is that women aren't too quick to convict somebody before they've really had their due process. I don't think everyone that is accused actually did something wrong.
Do you think most people who are accused did something wrong?
by today's standards, yes. And I think that's the difference here, is our standards today after the Me Too movement of how you speak and treat women is significantly different. And that's not bad. That's actually a good thing. But when you look at the standards from the 1990s or 1980s, you know, when I was coming up, no, I don't think the things that women would be complaining about would be a problem back then. So it kind of depends on what standard you're looking at and the age of that person that you are speaking about.
Are you concerned that some of the people who have had allegations leveled against them are treated the same or could be treated the same as a Harvey Weinstein, as a that one offense, all offenses are equally egregious and either worthy of condemnation, job loss, et cetera? Is that a concern for you, yes or no?
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, we have to be really careful as society, as male and females, that we're looking at the difference between sexual assault and sexual harassment. Those are two very different things. Sexual assault is where, you know, somebody puts their hands on another human being with the intent to have sex or to force them into that. That's very different than sexual harassment. And sexual harassment has many different degrees. It's the obvious, the point-blank allegations or requests to see body parts. Those are the really easy ones. As you start filtering down and you look at the comment that's made that may be inappropriate or the way somebody interpreted something that was said, that's where I really have concern, because I think the first time that happens and it comes out that it really was a comment in passing and was never intended in that way. It was misinterpreted. And we've already, you know, let that guy go. He's gone. He may never get another job in Rochester because everybody knows his name. Now we've got a problem.
Okay. Back to your phone calls. Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
I do recall some of the things very well about Martin King and some of the things that he said. And there were so many people that good friends, people that whose opinion he honored, who were always saying, let's slow down. Let's not be so fierce in our demands. We may evoke retaliation. And his basic response was, we cannot be bullied by the possibilities of retaliation. That will surely happen in some instances, but it shouldn't deter us from trying to pursue justice and protection for our peoples. And I feel like it's the same thing here. The predators always want to come out as victims. And they like to, this whole thing hanging in the air of, you're going to be sorry for telling. It just bothers me a lot because it's so reminiscent of the typical response when the guilty are, in this instance, are accused of something. And as for whether or not you get an innocent man or not, I say that the ones that are usually that we've heard most about have created a pattern, not just in behavior with that one woman as with Anita Hill, because there was a pattern there, an ongoing pattern, but also with other women, when multiple women come forward and say, yes, I experienced that too. So there's a lot there that it takes already to get anybody doing any jail time for, certainly for rape or even suffer consequences for harassment. So I wish that this party would end, this pity party for the men. If we don't trust them, they have taught us for millenniums not to trust them. Thank you.
Jane, thank you for the phone call. Melanie?
Jane, I don't disagree with you about, you know, the retaliation aspect here. You know, I think that ship sailed. I don't think women, generally speaking, have the same fears that they had prior to the Me Too movement of going to their HR, going to their boss, going somewhere and saying, I am dealing with this issue with this person and we need to make it stop.
That's a good thing, right?
I think it's a great thing.
Absolutely.
And that is the whole point of Me Too. And I feel very similar that most of these men that have hit national TV are clearly predators. And they clearly weren't just the you know, comment here or there, or, you know, an alleged inappropriate hand touching. You know, these were bad people and clearly did not have the judgment that normal male human beings have, that they know what's not right or wrong. But at the same time, as women in the workforce, we can't just stop the conversation there. It has to continue, and it has to continue from both sides about how are we going to work together? How are we going to move this workforce forward? And as we look at the millennials coming in and the changes of personalities and socialization, how is this Me Too movement, the concept of what's appropriate behavior as well as comments in the workforce mean?
All right. Thank you, Jane. John in Rochester, next on the phone. Our guest, by the way, is Melanie Wolk, who's a litigation attorney with Trivette Cristo. Go ahead, John.
How you doing? Good afternoon.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. My thing is, you better start watching the school girls. I volunteered at an elementary school in my area, and I serve ice cream on Fridays. You want to see these girls trying to aggravate these guys of doing something. So they're starting young.
What?
Yes.
John, elementary school?
Yes, elementary school. I volunteer. All I can do is smile. I can't say anything. But they're doing it now.
John, hold on. Let me just make sure I understand this, because I don't want to misrepresent you. The elementary school girls, thanks to the Me Too movement, are trying to egg the boys into doing something inappropriate?
Yep.
Okay. No way, man. Come on. Really?
I'm there. I'm a volunteer. I'm there most of the time. And especially at lunchtime, they want to egg the guys to do it.
A 10-year-old girl read the New York Times story on Harvey Weinstein and now wants to get all the boys to...
Fight for her.
Okay. Maybe I'm not being empathetic enough to...
You're fine.
And I'm glad you called, John. Melanie, you want to add to that?
I think elementary kids are elementary kids, and I think at lunchtime and recess... they do a lot of fun and weird things, and maybe it's us as society and adults putting other actions into it.
Yeah, let's go back to the adult part of the conversation. John, I appreciate the call. Not really following it, but I do appreciate the sentiment here. Rich in Rochester next. Go ahead, Rich.
What this whole thing reminds me of when affirmative action came along, and when women had to get jobs, all of a sudden, because men have to act like decent human beings and aren't getting away with acting like decent, acting any other way, they feel like they're victimized. They turn around and then make themselves the victim. This is no different than saying, you know, once there was affirmative action, they talked about set asides, just ignoring the fact that they set aside 100% of the jobs for white people at one point. You have to be willing to be empathetic and realize and watch your actions. And to the point of one, your guess is that if there's a pattern of a person doing something, they're probably doing it. Like I look at the Neil deGrasse Tyson issue, and all three of those incidents in no way show any sort of pattern. And I think he maybe have gotten caught up in it. And I think that's the problem with these type of things. There's a hysteria. And this all of a sudden, the men being these weak, are they being these vulnerable little things because now women are saying, no, you don't have the right to touch me. Or no, you don't have the right to call me babe or anything. They're offended because someone telling them to act like a human being. For me, there's no sympathy there. I don't get it.
Oh, okay. Rich, thank you. So...
Rich, I agree. I mean, I don't have a lot of empathy for predators. I don't have a lot of empathy for people that have that pattern that we're discussing. I mean, I don't think most men out and out say things and have actions that reach these kind of allegations that we've had in mainstream Hollywood. And that's kind of like not the point for me, because I know, I mean, I work with a partner who's 78 years old. I mean, we're equals in the firm, and he will on occasion slip and say, honey, can you get me? And I'm not offended by it. Many other women would be. I tend to look at the person as they are and say, this is a 78-year-old man who's been practicing law for more than three quarters of his life, and calling me honey now and then isn't going to cause me to get upset. That doesn't mean other women won't. And it's not appropriate. But how do we start having these conversations, these general and generation conversations about he knows he shouldn't say it. What if he slips? What does he do to fix it? How does he fix it to make the person okay? He's not trying to upset that person. He made a mistake. Those are the conversations I want to have. Those are the things where we need to figure out where is the line and what does that line mean?
Okay. And on that note, the USA Today piece that was titled, "Will Me Too Turn Into Not Her? Movement May Come With Unintended Workplace Consequences." Let me quote from the piece on exactly this point. Quote, Johnny Taylor, president and CEO of the Society for Human Resource Management, said he grew up in South Florida around Latinos who were expressive and dispensed hugs freely, and also among Southerners who often used terms like honey, sweetheart, and sugar with their acquaintances. In some workplaces, those practices now could form the basis of a severe reprimand. What one does in one culture in South Florida is very different than what's acceptable in Iowa, he said. In a recent piece for USA Today, it's not as simple as here's the national standard. It requires different interventions giving cultural nuance, geographic nuance, and then your big one is age, end quote.
Yeah, it's there. And this isn't about, for me, this isn't about making men the, you know, the victims or having empathy for that. This isn't about that for me. This is about how do we have the conversation in our time and space that we have. How can a young woman who wants to be on that big business deal send the message that she wants to be on that big business deal, and simply because it's nights and weekends with a senior partner does not mean they should not consider her? How does she send that message? How do the senior partners take out of their minds now that she's a female and just look at, you know, Associate A and Associate B? And those are the conversations we have.
How do we do that?
I've thought a lot about that. And I think it's much more difficult than it sounds. I think it's in some ways almost impossible. But what I think has to happen has to be a very blunt conversation in those work areas. You know, this we can't hide and you know, in many ways, you know, pussyfoot around the issue there. I mean, I think you got to kind of hit it head on. And that's always how I've done my career and practice law is, you know what, if I think Bobby got that because someone was afraid to have me in the room, I walk in and sit down and have that conversation. That's always who I've been. And I think, I don't know how that senior partner is going to take that or how that senior executive is going to take it, but I think we got to put it on the table. And if you don't, we're going to have potentially a backlash for years to come.
That bluntness is a very uncomfortable thing for a lot of people. Particularly... For women who, if I could just sort of observe, if we agree that women have been, again, generally speaking, harassed way more than, well, no one should be harassed, but harassed often, treated poorly, and now are rightfully pushing back, it puts a lot of pressure on women to also then have to go into their bosses and say, hey, now that this Me Too movement's a thing, just in case you're considering me, you know, I'd still like to do this project. It might entail late nights. It might entail weekends or travel. I still want to be in the conversation. Don't X me out of it just because of Me Too. That puts a lot of responsibility on women as well who've already been victimized.
Absolutely. I think there's two sides to that sword, though. It also, because they have Me Too behind them right now, I think it makes it a little bit easier to walk in and say, hey, I'm just checking in on this, because they have a little more power right now. They have society understanding what's going on. They have everybody very much aware in work environments about these issues. So I think in a way you walk in there a little more empowered versus being more reserved. And the second thought, though, it is never easy to walk into a room with your boss, and some people will view it as confronting them. I don't think it has to be a confronting kind of conversation. I think it's a blunt conversation. I would love to be on this project. I would do this even if Me Too wasn't out there. You know, I would like to be on this project. I hope the fact that I have a 5-year-old son will not affect my abilities and in your eyes to work nights and weekends. I think this fits a lot of women at a lot of different points in their career, not just the Me Too, where you've got to go in and just put it on the table and see what happens.
One more point before we get back to your phone calls. on the subject of how we talk to each other. I understand culturally there are differences, and I don't want to downplay that. But I'm going to be honest. I'm going to betray a bias here. When I hear a man talk to a woman and say, "Hey, babe, hey, sweetheart, hey, sugar, oh, thanks, honey, thanks. Hey, can you go grab me that water, sweetheart? Thank you." It drives me up a wall. It's so demeaning. And I know somebody listening right now might say, "Evan, you don't get it. That's just sort of a colloquialism." And I'm open to that. Like, I'm open to culturally it's different. But I think as a net on society, if men are talking to women like that, it is sort of infantilizing. It's reducing in stature. It has that effect. And it's not always the men who are older. Not always. So can we, without going to HR saying, "I'm filing a claim here," can we find a way to address that if we agree that maybe that's a little much? What would you say? You
know, I think now that we have these issues out in the open and we're talking about them, and it's not merely, you know, two people that work in a business going, "God, I hate when he always calls me honey," mm-hmm. and talking about it in their gibberish in the corner or in the copy room, you can go to HR. Most of HR are actually women today. And you could go in and sit down and say, "Hey, look, you know, so-and-so has this really bad habit of calling everyone sugar. And it's not appropriate. It kind of demeans me when with her clients or around the staff. You think you can talk to him a little bit about it? You know, maybe see if we can try to get that out of his vocabulary." If it's a man that is not older and it's someone in their 50s to 30s, I can tell you my response would be right back to his face. I've always been that way. If I would be like, "Okay, sweetie, on your way to the copier, can you grab me some paper too?" Like, I wouldn't hesitate because I think anyone in that age group knows better. They absolutely know it is not appropriate. And other than a few southern areas, but in Rochester particularly, they know that is not an appropriate word to use or how to speak to anybody in the work environment. And I think you give it back a little bit. And what is he going to do? I mean, you're suddenly fired? You're not going to be fired over that. He's going to have to look at himself and say, okay.
But maybe you don't get the next project or promotion. Maybe that's a fear.
I think it absolutely is a fair fear. But at the same time, maybe someone else was meant for that next project or promotion. I'm not saying always, but we need to keep everything in a little bit of a reality basket here. You're not always going to get that promotion. You're not always going to get the project, male or female. So, or you shouldn't. So you've got to figure out, was this because of my relationship with my boss, or was it just somebody else's turn? And if you feel like it was something with your relationship with your boss and these comments that are made to you, then you know what? By all means, speak up. That's why businesses have HR departments. You don't have to confront that person. You can go to HR and say, "I think we have a problem. I hope it's not a problem, but I think we do," and have that conversation.
My guest is Melanie Wolkin, a litigation attorney with Trivette Christo, talking about the recent piece in USA Today, "Will Me Too Turn Into Not Her? Movement May Come With Unintended Workplace Consequences." Pew Research finds that adults now feel that it is harder to navigate workplace interactions. Men in particular are more nervous about it, and older men very concerned about what they say around women. We're talking about that, and we'll get more of your feedback after this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, Governor Andrew Cuomo is proposing a ban on plastic bags in the grocery store. We'll discuss the possible impacts. In our second hour, Esquire magazine published a piece arguing that public cruelty led to the demise of the band Hootie and the Blowfish. Now maybe you think, well, they were the worst, but we'll talk about public love or dislike can influence careers and how concepts like groupthink work. Talk with you Wednesday. And welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson alongside Melanie Wolk here, and we're getting more of your feedback. So let's get Ryan in Rochester next. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think your guest right before the break there summed it up perfectly. If someone says something that offends you, you have to call them out on it. It doesn't have to be confrontational, but if you're dealing with a man that uses language, or even your example, Evan, if they're so outdated in the way they deal with people, you have to call them out on it. And even more importantly, let your supervisor know. It doesn't always have to be a call to HR and turn into something huge, but at least let them know, because for someone like myself and people who were raised, you know, the right way to speak with all people in a respectful nature, it might seem common sense, but for people who talk in that way, it's not common sense and it's not common knowledge. And they're only going to get that by doing what we're doing right now, talking about things and having training in the workplace, and really calling that out is going to bring that to light. So thanks for letting me on, and appreciate the conversation.
Ryan, thank you for absolutely. The phone call. Melanie, some thoughts on that?
That's absolutely it. And we need to realize that not every step has to, you know, be immediately to HR. There are hierarchies in businesses, and that conversation can be had with that person's direct boss. You can have that conversation, such as, you know, Joe, I really don't like when you call me sugar or honey, or I don't like the jokes that have a lot of four-letter words in them. Whatever, you know, just have it. Put them on notice that it's not okay. And then take it to the next step if you need to.
All right, here's a comment from a listener who asked it to be anonymous. She writes, I find it sad that this entire conversation ultimately is looking at the very complicated next phase of where to go with the Me Too movement as ultimately only requiring responsibility on the part of women. Once again, women, as the victims in this situation, are now being told that speaking up, even in the gray areas, is not wise, because it will hurt them in the eyes of men. Instead of shifting the paradigm to be that men and women will need to figure out how to coexist in the workplace, we are instead looking at it through a male lens in this conversation. Of course, it's challenging for all of us to recalibrate and consider how we impact each other in a work situation. But to claim that that may have a negative impact on women in the workplace, and therefore women better take this on themselves to be very careful, in my mind, is to insist on looking at it through the power lens of men. Why not instead look at it as how do we all move forward with fear and discomfort and learning and growth on all of our parts?
You know, I actually disagree, because as a woman, I look at this through my eyes. I look at it and I start thinking, what if I was starting my career right now? What if I was in my 30s? What if I was starting a family right now? These things, I think women have to take the bull by the horns. They have to address them, because it's their career. It's their life. I don't think the men get to sit in the corner and ignore everything going on around them and not participate and not make changes in their own behavior. That's not what I'm saying. I think what we're saying kind of similarly is that everyone needs to kind of meet at the table and figure out how we're going to do it.
Okay. I appreciate both Melanie's perspective and the perspective of the emailer. And I think, let me tell the woman who emailed, this conversation is an ongoing one. And I promise you, there are going to be conversations on this program about how men view the importance of recalibrating how they understand workplace interaction. This is a perspective that came up here that not only in regards to the recent USA Today piece, but a conversation with Melanie the last time she was in here. And so it's one of a series of conversations. Now, Jerry, who is a woman, writes to us and says, we're talking about a broad spectrum of behavior with predators at one end and decent men at the other. I suggest that the people who complain and those who are looking at complaints know the players who has the pattern, the intent, or the conscience indifference, does not care if he's hurting or abusing or not, and when the power or authority is involved in these matters, and that some women on the receiving end, likewise recognizing which men are the consistent, intentional, or indifferent ones, especially when power or authority is involved, take note, and that people not be overly sensitive or victimhood conscious within these parameters. Sensitivity, yes, but not oversensitivity. Then all of this will be more meaningful against the real perpetrators and for the real victims. That is from Jerry, a woman who writes to us this afternoon.
Jerry's getting what I'm saying. Jerry and I are on the same page. You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, when Weinstein information came out, those women knew about each other. Maybe not specifically which woman it was, but he had a long, bad reputation. And it wasn't because it was hearsay. It was because of what he was doing. So I know women speak in the workforce. I know they do. I know they talk about many things, including jobs and people they're working with and for. And so I would find it hard-pressed if someone is misbehaving in such ways with more than one woman or has done so in the past that it wouldn't come out eventually. And those are the people we don't want working with us.
Beverly writes to us and says, if a man is afraid that he will say something that will offend a woman, maybe he already knows it is offensive.
I say a lot of things that sometimes I don't think about, and I don't think it's offensive. And then after it's out, and I realize maybe who I'm talking to or what the subject was about, that it could be offensive to them. I think men have a reason to hesitate and question how their interactions go forward with women in the work environment. I think they absolutely do, and they should. But I don't think all of them are aware that some of their behavior is offensive.
Sarah writes to us and says she's concerned that Melanie is downplaying harassment. She says harassment and the emotional weight of power structures behind it can be as damaging as a physical assault.
Absolutely. I am not, and I am completely and utterly, and I think Dawson and I are in the same boat about this, about being behind Me Too and taking the predator aspect out as well as the sexual harassment. I mean, anytime you go to work and you feel like you've been cheapened or treated as not an equal or as someone that's of value in there, has an emotional impact on you, has as many impacts on depression and anxiety. It can go, list can go on and on. I'm not trying to downplay that. I'm trying to say, how do we move forward? How do we move forward with this work environment? And how do women continue to get their message through, not just to men, but to society, and men be able to hear it and work with it?
Whitney writes to us and says, I have an issue when young women call me honey. I think it is very disrespectful and condescending. I had a young receptionist at a doctor's office address me this way the other day. Calling me ma'am would have been much more respectful. That's from Whitney. I would say again, Whitney, I don't want to minimize context. I mean, I certainly recognize patterns of speech, depending on where you grew up and what your background is, may be different. Norms are different. I'm only recognizing my own knee-jerk reaction when I hear usually a man talking to a woman, usually a younger woman, but a woman, not a girl, not a schoolgirl, but a professional woman as honey, sweetheart, sugar, with the implication of, hey, could you go get me a little coffee? As opposed to treating you like someone who deserves respect in the workplace. So, but I hear you, Whitney. I mean, things all land a little differently.
And Whitney, I'm 45 and I'm actually offended when they call me ma'am. I tell them not to.
Manan on the phone next. Go ahead, Manan.
Hi, Evan. I'd like to say that I experienced a lot of harassment since 1985. I wrote a letter to Mayor Lovely Warren recently that I was so exhausted that I just started staying home. I was crossing the street and a white male, probably 70, a lot older than me, was shouting, I need a ride, hanging out, and I don't even drink. And this is what he was doing while I was trying to cross the street. A couple of years ago, several men were drinking. They were trying to touch me on the bus. The bus driver told them to leave me alone. There was a man on a pickup truck who said, hey, beautiful, look this way. I moved to University Avenue now. I went to the store next door and I wrote to the mayor that a man came to me and said, hi, beautiful. A second man came behind me and asked me, are you married? And I just told all my friends and family, I've been single since 1985. I live alone and I'm becoming like Susan B. Anthony and Emily Dickinson, living alone and not associating with men. In the library, I was harassed by two security guards who were fighting over me. And I went to the head of the library and stopped going there. I just became very, like a loner, and I stayed home a lot. And I think that, you know, men, women also, you know, they're called terrible names. When I don't respond, they call me horrible things, like bitch, whore, these kind of things. So I told them that I'm not a dog. When I was 5 years old, I told my dad that this young boy was calling me a chick. I said, I'm not a chicken. I'm not a dog. I'm not any of these things, you know, the name calling. Patriarchal, you know, society has encouraged all this for centuries and decades. So when Melanie is saying that Me Too has, you know, made these women come forward, this has been going on for decades. And these men are insecure and they want a relationship with me. But Evan, I didn't find the right man yet. And these men are security guards, maintenance people, janitors. They don't even know me. I have two master's degrees. Mm. So anyway, Evan, I did write to Mayor Lovely Warren recently about this and told them how difficult it was to walk on the sidewalk. And I also told her and everybody, I don't want to be pretty. They keep saying I'm pretty. I don't want to be ugly. I just want to be left alone. Thank you, Evan.
Manon, thanks for the phone call. Melanie, what do you think?
I don't get that much attention anywhere. Not to make light of it. People, there are bad people. There are men, and I'll even say women in some aspects, that are inappropriate. They weren't raised correctly. They don't have the concept of respect, and it's not just for the opposite sex. And they're everywhere, and they will always be everywhere. I don't think we're going to somehow rid our society of those individuals in 50 years. And I think we have to take them for what they are, and that's just people you don't want to be associated with and people you don't want to interact with, and you just walk away.
Teresa writes to us and says, Evan, from a woman, I will quote MLK, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Thus, the onus is on women to demand the treatment and the respect that we want. From Teresa, a woman. Agree or disagree there?
Agree. And that's what we've been doing. With the Me Too movement, I think we've absolutely been demanding the respect and the attention to this issue. And I think as we move forward, we have to continue driving it.
I think I'm returning to that anonymous email from earlier this hour, and I don't think I'm hearing from Attorney Melanie Wolk this hour that men don't have a role here. I mean, I think you're talking about the complexity as we go forward and the reality that you are concerned that literally women won't be promoted, won't get important projects or assignments because men are worried. I don't hear you saying, therefore, it's all on women. But I do hear you saying that, you know, sort of realistically there is maybe a path forward as you see it, that acknowledges the complexity, that acknowledges that change can be hard, that tries to give a little grace and a little space to change as opposed to just sort of convicting someone right away. Unless, obviously, let's be clear here. There are times where you need the version of a work death penalty there. But I will say men must do much better. And that is true for, I think, men to call out men too, where they see it, not just our own sort of behavior. Men have been around other men. And you hear them talking about women in certain ways. You hear men saying things that are inappropriate. Sometimes it could be as much as just in a lunch setting at the office, and men just think they can talk about that. I think that perpetuates. I think there is a requirement for men to call out men, even if men are quote unquote the decent people. So I think it's complex. I think it involves a lot of people. And certainly not excluding men. I think men have a huge, in many ways, we've caused the problems for years.
And I think most men want to have the conversation. They want to know not just what's expected, but how to continue the different interactions that they have. You know, there are a lot of people that work together and then go out after work socially. You know, does that change that interaction? Does it not? And I think men do want to take an active role because it's just as much their future work environment as it is women's.
All right, one more email. Robert says, Evan, I admit I'm terrified now. No more flirting at work. Talking, maybe not that either. All right, that's pretty extreme, Robert, but let's take the substance of one of his parts. He says, no more flirting at work. Is it right now? Should there be a moratorium on flirting at work?
If you're a male, I think that's a good idea. I think it could quickly be misrepresented, misunderstood. You might be thinking she's flirting back and she's not. And I think in the time you're in right now, where it is a highly sensitive topic and out there so much that you can't afford as a male to have your interaction to be misinterpreted or misconstrued, and you maybe not understand what's coming back at you.
All right, last point here. I have heard some response to the Me Too movement that says essentially this, that the number of false claims is small enough, not zero. I mean, everybody acknowledges that if you've got 100 claims, some non-zero number will be false, but it's not a very large number, and that it is small enough and that the inequality has been so persistent and so in the favor of men for so long that men who get caught up in that small number of false allegations are collateral damage in the way that the pendulum of justice is swinging, and that is inevitable, and that you cannot perfectly move the pendulum to the middle, that there's going to be occasional messy parts of it, but the overall benefit is strong enough that we can't be overly concerned. I mean, again, I'm representing some of what I've heard. I know you've heard that.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
I say women would never tolerate being the collateral damage. and therefore we can't allow another sex or another generation or anyone else to become the collateral damage. You know, we have a society here, while litigious, actually does have a concept of due process, and it has to be used. If we fail to do that, and there's, you know, 10 men in every city that gets caught up in the false accusations, let's think about what that does to their wives, their sisters, their daughters, their mothers, and it's not collateral damage. It becomes a much larger net.
Are you optimistic that the end result, and there's no end result of any movement like Me Too. I mean, this is an ongoing society, and you know, nothing has an end point, but are you optimistic that where we are going with this is ultimately a much better place in society?
Absolutely, I am. I know the journey may not be easy, but I know as we continue down it, the comfortability and the concerns that we have today will work themselves out.
Melanie Wolk is a litigation attorney with Trivette Cristo. Thanks for taking the time. Appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Our thanks as well to engineer Rob Braden, and the producer of Connections is Megan Mack. Hope you have a nice afternoon wherever you are, and we're right back with you Wednesday on member-supported public radio.